Basketball fans, welcome to the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. I'm Dan Grant, at Slam and Danny G on Twitter, and I'm here with a man whose moonlight desires haunt him and is certainly sending a wave over my mind. It's Russell Peddle and we, the podcast. Russ, how are you?
I am doing fantastic. We beat the Chicago Bulls. Imagine that.
Wow. I, never really would have believed it was possible given what has happened. I believe it was an 11-game losing streak against the Bulls.
Yeah, the last time they beat Chicago was on December 31st, 2013.
Wow. That's unbelievable. I had just moved back. I was living overseas, and I had just moved back to Canada. I can't believe that that's... I've gotten married since then. I've got a job as a teacher since then. A lot of things have happened.
I had just been married for a couple months, and that's almost going to be 4 years. Conceived and had a child that's now over 2 years old.
That's unbelievable.
That is the first Raptors win over the Bulls in my son's lifetime.
In your son's actual entire life.
Yeah.
Big day. You can remind him of it one day.
Because I will.
Obviously
I might wake him up and tell him now.
You should. It was a pretty memorable one.
Yeah, it was. It's definitely one we'll be talking about for years to come. I'm just blown away. Like, we usually don't, we usually record on off nights and a bit of change of a pace this week. We're recording, right after the Raptors Bulls game, which is like, one of the most emotional, weird, crazy games I think I've watched in a long time. And, so I'm really pumped to chat about it.
Totally. I think that was definitely the most memorable game of the season. I mean, not just with recency bias, I think just with everything that went on. But so let's get into it then. Let's get into Raptors past, present, and future. We'll start with the most recent past, and that is the game tonight. So Russell, just go right ahead. What were your takeaways from this, this crazy win over Chicago?
Well, somehow we managed to get over 2 minutes into this podcast without making a punch joke. I figured there'd be there might be one coming in the intro or something, but the obviously that's going to be the big thing that comes away from this is the fact that Serge Ibaka and Robin Lopez got into a fist fight, and not like a hold me back type fight, like a real punches were thrown. They weren't hard connections, but those were pretty fierce punches thrown, and people were falling all over the ground and pulling each other back, and
from some big men too.
Yeah, and it was one of the legitimately one of the most fighty looking fights I've ever seen in the NBA. It looked like a legitimate hockey fight, and I'm sure all my hockey fan friends who I get in arguments about basketball versus hockey were very quick to send me gifts and things, so making fun of the fight. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So that's a big takeaway from the game, obviously, because we're recording this on Tuesday night, as we said. So in terms of Serge Ibaka's suspension or injury, he was holding his wrist after the punch. One of those things is Ibaka's going to miss some time. I mean, I'd be very shocked if he's in uniform for the next game, one way or the other. So we'll see how that goes. I think that could be the real, that could really bring all this crashing down after a really emotional, crazy win. But, the Raptors are now half a game, as of recording, are now half a game out of the three seed with Washington idle tonight. But, the Ibaka, the fallout from that Ibaka thing, punch, will loom large on the rest of the season and the final playoff seeding for the Raptors. But I mean, other than that, I mean, the big takeaways from the game, like, I don't want it to just be about the punch. Like, the thing is after the punch, the Raptors outscored the Bulls 50-32. So you talk about like moments like that, like, your team having some fight and galvanizing the team into action after these things. And, you talk about that and, how much of it is true and how much of it is like, it's like the whole momentum thing. Like, is that a real thing, et cetera. But the Raptors really came together somehow after that incident, and the play of DeMar DeRozan, the play of PJ Tucker,
absolutely,
just they showed some real fight, after the fight.
Yeah. Yes.
So it was really, really amazing, and especially when against a Bulls team where you really just feel like this curse, just every game that they play against the Bulls, it's like this, they can't honestly be losing to this team. Like the last couple of years, they've been, you know, decidedly better than them. And especially right now, like the Bulls are spiraling out of the playoffs. They're, you know, they have a terrible road record. They're without Wade, and they just seem like, you know, they made a pretty bad trade at the deadline and lost two solid rotation pieces and, you know, for basically nothing. Mm-hmm. And you can't help but look at that and go like, yeah, I mean, the Raptors should win this game even without Kyle Lowry. But still, the Bulls, like, were handling them, like, shot, like, 70% in the first quarter. And just it seemed like everything was going down. So at least, you know, the Raptors persevered because the big thing with this team has been the last couple of years, their MO has been that they don't get blown out. They can come back. And the OKC game, which we'll talk about in a minute, yeah, really brought that into question. And I mean, it looked like we might be going that way again. It looked like this game might be equally embarrassing, mm-hmm, but they turned it around and it gives you some hope. And at the end of the day, it was a 3-1 week. It was a roller coaster of emotion, but mm-hmm, we can talk about that. I mean, but yeah, before we do, what were your takeaways from this game?
Yeah, so it's funny. We were talking via text message, and I was out for a little bit, and I missed. I usually on game nights I will record and watch them later on, or not every night, but sometimes I'll record them anyway and watch them later on or the next morning or something. And I actually tuned in and I looked at the time of the fight. I literally must have been watching the next sequence or maybe two sequences later, and they weren't really talking about it on the broadcast at all anymore. I guess they don't like to encourage that kind of stuff. And I mean, you talking about it too much, and they mentioned it later kind of in passing, but there was no, I don't know. Anyway, when I tuned in, there was a couple minutes left in the third quarter, and I was wondering where Ibaka was, but you know, maybe he's just on the bench, maybe he's in foul trouble, whatever. And the game obviously was not going well. The Raptors were down about 12 or 13 at that time. And I was just kind of watching, and then they started to mount a bit of a comeback in the fourth. And again, I'm like, where is Serge Ibaka? And then Jonas got called for that weird technical foul where he was just kind of jostling for position and they called him for a tech. And
yeah, that was horrible.
Yeah, brutal call, right? But then Jack Armstrong says, oh, well, I guess you don't want fights. And I actually said to my wife, oh, yeah, there was that fight in the scrum in the OKC game last night. So I guess maybe there's like a league-wide mandate to make sure this doesn't go on. And with not knowing at all what had happened. And then just trying to get ready for this, I like flipped over just to trying to look at the box score, and I saw Ibaka and Lopez throw punches. I was like, "What is happening?" And I, you know, frantically went scrolling through the internet looking for clips, and saw a few different ones. It really looked like Lopez maybe he didn't hear the whistle, or I don't really know, because he went after the ball really hard, and Ibaka was just holding the ball, and then obviously things went, you know, south from there. I'm sure everyone listening to this saw what happened. So it'd be interesting to hear what was the genesis of something was said. I'd like to hear from both guys and kind of figure it out. As you said, for the Raptors moving forward, I mean, for the Bulls, it doesn't really matter. They're not going to make the playoffs, I don't think. I mean, they're on the bubble kind of, but I think, as you mentioned, that weird trade they made was kind of, I think they're trying to get out of the playoffs and maybe get a better draft pick, because it doesn't make any sense if you're a team that's trying to compete. And now with Wade's injury, they don't seem like a team that's going in the right direction. But the Raptors, if Ibaka is injured or if he gets suspended for any, you know, length of time, and I've looked up, I tried to look up some fighting suspensions. I mean, he only threw one punch and he didn't connect. So
he didn't instigate either.
No, he didn't, which is actually a really big deal. He could say he's defending himself. He didn't even instigate the incident, right? He was just kind of standing there.
No, you rewatched the video, and it's like he might have given a subtle nudge or elbow.
Yeah, yeah.
They could have been back and forth for a while. Like for sure. To escalate as quickly as it did, they must have been jostling a bit on some previous possessions. And I'm sure we'll hear more about that as it comes out. But the Lopez swiping at the ball was the first thing. And then, you know, Ibaka took exception to that. And then Lopez threw the first swing. So, yeah, obviously we're pro-Raptors, but I really don't feel like this was Ibaka's doing. And I feel like he deserves at least a lighter, if he does get suspended, I mean, at the end of the day, you do throw a punch and there was like a referee in between the two players.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, no, it's not. And you run the risk of, you know, regardless, I think that a suspension is almost inevitable, but I would like to think that it'll be lighter than Lopez's, but maybe their league will just crack down and say, you know, we're going to discourage this entirely, and they're going to give both guys like a significant suspension and probably like an even one, just so we don't have to discuss, well, is it okay to punch if you were punched first?
Right, you know, right. I mean? No, it's just unacceptable. It's like we're, I guess, kind of coming back to being teachers. It's a no tolerance, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's it. So if he does get suspended, I don't think it'll be like a 10-game suspension or anything like that. I was looking up some of the suspensions for fighting. Those are usually in, you know, when there's a bench clearing brawl, that kind of a thing.
Right.
And obviously this wasn't that. So, you know, one or two or maybe three games, if they want to make a point of it, I could see happening for sure, which is tough for Toronto. But anyway, I watched the rest of the game totally like blind as an idiot, basically till overtime. And just really enjoyed the comeback. Fred VanVleet, the growth that he's shown this season is pretty astonishing, how much he's been able to, you know, play with Kyle Lowry out. And they're using 3-point guards. Wright has been kind of getting the short end of the stick lately, only played 5 minutes tonight. But it's just because VanVleet's playing so well. You know, he was a plus 16 tonight, played 20 minutes. And
he was on the floor for everything, like crunch time, fourth quarter, overtime. Like he was, it doesn't show up in the box score necessarily what he was doing, but he was a plus, he was a team leading plus 16 in the game. So
yeah, absolutely. And he was just making a lot of the right plays. He had the one bad turnover, a cut pass he kind of telegraphed to Jimmy Butler, but I mean, it's Jimmy Butler. He's an all NBA defensive player, right? So,
exactly.
It's pretty cool to see him, doing that and, stepping up in a big moment. Cause this is a team right now that's not at 100%. And, especially with Ibaka leaving the game, they just needed to find a way, and to see them find a way to win like that in a game like this, even against a team like the Bulls, who they, you can say, yes, they should be beating them, but they haven't, and it looked like they were going to lose again. So really cool, kind of a signature team win, and hopefully they can build on that moving forward. We can talk about more about the Bulls game later, and I'm sure we will, but this week, as you said, was a 3-1 week, which is nice. The blowout win versus the Pacers was great. I was there and witnessed a few cool things. PJ Tucker's defense against Paul George and Ibaka just kind of dominating the Pacers team in the paint was fantastic. Miles Turner was in foul trouble. George had an okay game, but he didn't really affect much of the game. The game was never close. That was a really great win on the back of the 87-75 win over the Pistons, which was a nice defensive performance after that awful, awful Oklahoma City game, which there's a players, I guess they said they had the famous players only meeting after, where they really, you know, I don't know what was said. They said everyone had a chance to speak. They said it was a lot different than I can't remember which player said this, but he said it was a lot different than last year, where they used to, everyone was kind of quiet, would go about their business, and then things would boil over. This was more of a, okay, let's everybody air everything out now, and it was very productive. And obviously you've seen that these last three games. They've really responded.
Absolutely. I mean, they're 3-0 since the meeting. So, I mean, obviously something clicked, and especially when you look at the fact that, like, listen, there were down points in this game. There were down points at the beginning of the Detroit game. But I mean, at the end of the day, they went 3-0. They held the Pistons to 75 points. They blew out the Pacers, and those are two teams that are, you know, in the playoff hunt. And they came back and beat the Bulls. Another, like, these are all three teams that are jostling for playoff position, have every reason to try and win these games, and the Raptors took care of them. So, yeah, I mean, that's a positive thing. It's too bad that it took that Thunder loss for that to happen, but it's funny because after the Thunder loss, as I was watching it, I remember thinking to myself, you know, Dan and I are very optimistic, and we're very, like, we try to calm everyone. Like, the big part of our podcast, the theme of our podcast seems to be like, appreciate these Raptors, calm down, everyone. Mm-hmm. And after that Thunder loss, I was like, oh man, our next podcast is going to be so salty.
And then
even a little ways into the Pistons game, like there were, I wasn't really feeling it. The Pacers game was really stuck out as it was a good win. And then this game, they were getting hammered, and I was like, yeah, I don't know where I'm going to land. Like when we get on the podcast, how I'm going to feel about the team.
Mm-hmm.
But finally, you look back, 3-1 record, like you said, a signature win against a team that you haven't beaten since 2013. Huge comeback. I mean, apart from the impending Ibaka suspension, and I mean, there will almost certainly be one. I feel pretty good still, I guess.
Yeah, sure. And also, if Ibaka hurt, about the suspension, just briefly, if Ibaka hurt his hand, maybe he could just use his suspension to rest. So,
yeah, there's that.
There you go.
Silver lining.
Silver lining. But, the theme, calming people down. But, those wins are good. I mean, they have had, and this is longer than just this week, had a bit of a worrying trend of getting off to bad starts, and I don't know what you can do about that. I guess you hope that when Kyle Lowry comes back, if he's right, that helps it. But I don't know if you – I mean, Damari Carroll obviously hasn't been right. He's had some flashes, but – he's pretty good in the Pacers game. He's just not what we thought he was going to be when he was signed. It seems to me, honestly, I would say if it's, you split it into a pie, it's 90% health and maybe 10% natural kind of degradation of his skill. But he only played 17 minutes tonight and he was a minus 12, excuse me, which is a team worst. He's just not giving them very much. So I think maybe a change to the starting lineup. I think with the way Tucker is playing right now, he's making a good case that he could be inserted into the starting lineup at small forward for the foreseeable future. But it could be a big difference to the team down the stretch. Played 33 minutes tonight. And obviously anyone who watched the game saw he was the big – I mean, other than DeRozan's offense, he was the big difference maker on defense down the stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I definitely think that I don't think it's crazy to think that Tucker could be a good substitute for Carroll in the starting lineup. I mean, the lineup with the starting lineup with Carroll in it is has a net rating of -6.7 since the All-Star break, whereas the exact same lineup with Tucker in, I'm not looking at the exact same lineup, but if you look at a lineup like, would say, DeRozan, Ibaka, Joseph, Powell in place of Valanciunas, who hasn't been very that great either, and Tucker Tucker in place of Carroll, you're looking at a net rating of 33.3.
Right. So it just makes such a huge difference.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know what? Actually, let's just make sure we've moved into Raptors present. I meant to say that before because we're really talking about where the team sits now. And
we covered those four games pretty well. I mean, right?
I mean, what is there to talk about? I mean, the blowout, we don't need to hash that out because it hasn't become, a trend for the team. And the three wins were pretty cut and dried. Like, the win over you said the Pistons win didn't start well, but they took care of business and it wound up being a double-digit victory. The Pacers was just a blowout from start to finish, a nice win, and the Chicago game everyone just saw was a wild and crazy finish, but they got it done. So
just to correct myself before we move on, I was trying to say what the lineup the differential would be with Tucker in place of Carroll. The one with Carroll is a -6.7, like I said, and the one with Tucker directly in place of Carroll, with Valanciunas still in the lineup, is a 6.1. So you're looking at a 12.8 point swing per 100 possessions, and specifically on the defensive end. The lineup with Carroll is 112.2 defensive rating, whereas the one with Tucker is a 97.
Holy hell. That's that's unreal. And you can just see the intensity he brings on every single possession. And
I felt like he was getting, against the Bulls tonight, I felt like he was just getting every single rebound. Like there were rebounds where I felt like, the ball was up in the air and he was like on the opposite end of the court facing in the opposite direction. I felt like he still had a chance at getting it.
Yeah, absolutely. He's such a tough player, and he combines it with just enough skill. A lot of guys who play that tough, can't shoot at all, or can't handle the ball. But he plays like he's skilled enough that he really makes the most of every possession. He gets those loose balls, but then he does something with the ball. He's not just the guy who's going to go get the rebound and throw it away to somebody else. Made a couple open threes tonight, and he's just a really huge boon for the team. I didn't have any idea that he'd be playing this large of a role, and it's just awesome to watch.
He's absolutely tenacious. Like, what I love about him is he never shuts up. Like, anytime you see the camera pan to him, he's talking to someone. Like, today, Pirtle got a blocking foul, and and when they showed him after that, PJ Tucker was right up in his face, like, explaining what he should have done on that play. And, you know, right after the game, when DeRozan was, like, half celebrating, Tucker was right up in his face, like, talking directly to him and saying something, like, what you have to assume was encouraging or something like that. He's just, no matter what the situation, he's always talking. And I find it, like, he's such a insightful player. Like, when you hear him talk in post-game interviews and scrums and things like that, like, he just, his basketball IQ is through the charts and is off the charts. And I couldn't be happier with the acquisition. I really hope that his tenure as a Raptor, or his second tenure as a Raptor, isn't just this half season. I really, really hope that he can be back. I can't remember the last time that I cared this deeply about a role player.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's they'll have to switch the JYD 2.0 handle. That's what they call Carol at the
apparently. I don't know who called him that in the first place.
I think it's Herbie Kuhn, the announcer at the, who's a lovely man,
yeah, by
all accounts. But he does call him that pretty much every time he makes a play. Tucker seems to fit the role a whole lot better. So.
Yeah, because the Carol thing, I mean, for what it's worth, was like, you know, Herbie gave him that fine, but I mean, Carol hasn't really earned that as a Raptor.
Nope. No, like, I think that was just they thought he would. That was the role.
The style of play, the role. Yeah, exactly. But no, Tucker has really stepped in. So I think that, you know, Tucker is obviously playing more minutes than Carol. And at the end of the day, who starts a game isn't really all that important. But if they're getting out to bad starts in games and they're looking for a way to fix it, this is a potential way to do that. So it's one of those things, like, you know, maybe don't wait too long to do it. Like, Carol is contributing some nights, but he's just inconsistent. Whereas Tucker is at least giving you consistent effort.
Yes. And sure. And if Ibaka's going to miss any time, getting Tucker's rebounding into that starting lineup would really help as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the interesting look, if Ibaka is out, I'm sure they'll go back to Bebe or Pirtle or someone like that. But I mean, I would really like to see them attempt to go small and go Tucker and Carol.
Sure.
See what that's like, right?
Totally. Sorry.
So you wanted to transfer into Raptors present. I'm just stuck in the past, but I mean, let's do it.
No, we're all good. We're in the present. We've already, we're good. We're in the present.
Okay.
Talking about PJ, you know, moving to the starting lineup, I think that's something the team can do in the present. So yeah. I think we're okay. So I was going to say, talking about Tucker, it's a natural transition to talking about defense. The improved Raptors defense is really impressive. They've been the third best since the All-Star. These stats are before the Bulls game. I was looking at them this afternoon. So, but prior to the Bulls game, they were the third best in 13 games since the All-Star break in terms of defensive rating, behind only Golden State and San Antonio.
I can give you the updated numbers. They're fifth now.
I guess they gave up 120 points in that game. So
yeah, that's the problem there. But still fifth after giving up 120 points, and considering the fact that the Thunder game is in there too, where they gave up 123. I imagine you take those two games out and you're looking at something much closer to the top.
Yeah.
But they're, they're trailing only Golden State, San Antonio, Boston, and New Orleans of all teams.
Wow. Interesting. That's weird. New Orleans is in there.
Yeah. I was kind of shocked to see that too.
New Orleans has been an okay defensive team this whole season, but, they just can't score. So, anyway.
But at the end of the day, in terms of net rating, the Raptors are second in the East behind only Miami, who are first in the league. So,
yeah, which is unbelievable. That since the All-Star break?
Since the All-Star
break. Yeah, great. Okay. So I'm just saying that defense and that new identity is really cool. If you can pop this up as well, they were seventh in rebound percentage and second in defensive rebounding percentage since the All-Star break, which was a huge, huge improvement. Because prior, that was a huge... Sorry, go ahead.
So right now they're fourth in rebound percentage.
Okay. So they jumped three spots.
They're second in defensive rebound percentage.
Yeah, and that's what they were as well.
Yeah. And they're sixth in offensive rebound percentage.
Wow. That really jumped. Before the game, they were outside the top 10 anyway, because I looked that up. But, yeah, it's really cool to see that they're getting those, as we mentioned with Tucker, the loose balls. They're getting on the glass. They're able to really take care of the ball in that way, which is something that, you know, I think frustrated a lot of fans. Definitely frustrated me watching the team earlier in the year. Even last year, there was a lot of those you were missing that kind of an element. So it's really interesting. And really, I find it really, really pleasing to see those things happen, because when you get to the playoffs, those are the kind of things that really, really matter.
Absolutely.
Cool. So you were mentioning, you already kind of said that in the standings right now, Toronto is sitting, you said, half a game back of the Wizards?
Yeah, they're half of a game back.
Right. So, and they own the tiebreaker with Washington.
They
so,
do, yeah. They're basically, yeah. They're one game back in the loss column. Both teams have 42 wins, and as you said, they own the tiebreaker. So mm-hmm. they're well positioned to potentially get that third spot, especially because if you look at the two teams' schedules, the Washington has a very road-heavy schedule, and the Raptors, if you look at their schedule, it's pretty darn easy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to overlook teams, and I mean, two games against Miami and a game against Cleveland, yeah, those are difficult-looking games, but there's really nothing else on the schedule that'll make you scared, right? Like, I mean, the other teams on the schedule, the Dallas Mavericks, the Orlando Magic, the Charlotte Hornets, the Indiana Pacers, the Philadelphia 76ers, the Pacers again, the Pistons, the Knicks, and like I said, those two games against the Heat and the game against the Cavs. Like, you're looking at mostly sub-500 teams.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of – actually, you mentioned Miami, so that's an easy transition. I was going to say, Russell, so if we're well positioned to take this third seed, do we want the third seed? I mean, obviously you want to be higher seeded. It helps you in the playoffs, especially if there's an upset. You can maybe potentially get home court in the second round, if you get there. But mm-hmm. would you want the third seed if it meant playing the Miami Heat? Because they now have the same record as Detroit, or before tonight's play they did. They were in ninth and Detroit was still in eighth. But they are 23-6 in 2017 and have had a 4.6, so a plus 4.6 net rating, which is fourth in the NBA and best in the East since the calendar turned to 2017. Do you want any part of the Miami Heat in round one?
Well, absolutely not. They're the wild card at the bottom of the bracket, right? Like, whether it be mm-hmm. the teams in the playoffs or just out, like, they're the only team below Toronto that even feels like a threat. Like,
yeah.
Are you afraid of Atlanta, Indiana, Milwaukee, Detroit, Chicago? Like, those are the only teams left basically that have a shot at it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, no, you're not really. So Miami, like, all the stats really suggest that, you know, this is a good team. You look at their record since they started 11-30. They're like 22 and 20. I don't even remember. Hold on, I have to look. But
they were 11-30 to start the season.
Yeah, exactly. And since then, they're 24-6.
Yeah.
So, like, that's wild. And like you said, since the All-Star break, they have the best net rating. They have the best net rating in the East in 2017. Like, mm-hmm. they're a legitimate team. So, yeah, they're a big threat. But I don't think you can game the system, really, right? Like,
no.
With the games that are remaining, they're only 2.5 games back of Atlanta. They're only, mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about being a game and a half out of the sixth seed, but they're 2.5 out of fifth.
Mm-hmm.
And still, they're only a game out of ninth. So there's a lot of stuff that could happen there. And I think, you know, you remember trying to say, like, well, you know, what team do you want to get in the playoffs, like the Bulls or the Wizards years ago? And they got the Wizards, and we know how that went. So
yes,
I don't think I want to really think about that. We'll see where things land, because I think that, you know, hoping that they stay in fourth could very well end up with Miami in fifth. Like, that's not out of the question. So they're only two wins behind the Hawks. So, yeah, I want them to move up. I think that getting out of the Cleveland bracket is paramount. Because even facing Miami in the first round, you have to think that Toronto would still be favored at the end of the day. And, you know, if you want the shot at getting back at the conference finals, you want Boston or Washington in the semifinals. You don't want it. You don't want the conference semifinals. You don't want to face Cleveland in round two. Cause I mean, that's the end of your year there, basically, whether you, you know, whichever way you slice it, I don't think they're getting past Cleveland.
Yeah. And I mean, I've heard the argument that it doesn't really matter what round you play Cleveland, if it's the second or the third, cause you would have to try to get through them eventually anyway. And I think there's some truth to that, but
no, I agree with that.
Yeah. But you want, as you said, to have more playoff games. It's fun, first of all, as a fan,
absolutely,
to be able to watch those and to, you know, have the team continue to grow and make those deep playoff runs, I think is an important thing. It's, you don't ever really want to go backwards if you can help it. And I mean, the whole Miami thing, it's just, yeah, you're right. I think the right answer is that you need to move up if you can and just keep playing the games, because you can't worry about it. But the whole thing just feels like a game of Russian roulette. Someone's gonna get to play that Heat team, or not get to play, have to play that Heat team, and it feels like it's gonna be tough. I think they're a really bad matchup for Boston. I think if Boston gets them, that could be a really, really nasty first round series. So we'll see what happens. So moving on here to something that's a little more light and fun. Eric Kareen, who writes for The Athletic Toronto, wrote a really great article today about Corey Joseph. It was all about how, and I'm sure any Raptors fan knows this, how much he falls down, because he drives to the basket with reckless abandon. He makes all those crazy moves around the net. He's, you know, a pretty good finisher. He was great all of last season, and he's really kind of brought that back since Lowry's been out. But he falls down. He falls on his ass like all the time, and he's constantly flat on his back. He's jumping up. He's running back. Not that he complains about it, but he just does. And Eric wrote an article using that kind of as a framework to show, you know, his rebounding from, you know, just maybe a month ago or so, when he was benched in favor of Fred VanVleet after that bad performance in Orlando. And then he's really bounced back, and he's, you know, he falls down, but he always gets up, which I think was a really great piece. So go read that. Eric Kareen on the Athletic TO website. It's a really, really great read. But in honor of that article, a new little mini segment. I want to know, Russell, what is the most embarrassing or memorable time that you personally fell down?
It's a funny question to ask, because I have a long history of falling down.
Me too.
I'm a big man, and you know, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. And I've had a lot of instances of that in my life, slipping on the ice, doing various things. Actually, my worst fall ever was was in a basketball game. Interestingly enough, when I was 14 mm-hmm. years old, and I going up for a loose ball, I came down weird on my knee, and another guy fell on top of me, and I basically tore my ACL. And yeah, it was brutal. And I had total reconstruction done when I was 16. Like, my knee's half made of metal right now. I've had some follow up surgeries and stuff like that. So it's not a very embarrassing, thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But then beyond that, like, I slipped on the ice and tweaked that a couple different instances. I think the funniest one was, as funny as that can, that whole thing can be, but I actually did that my first year of university, and I was living in residence, like in a dormitory, and I was very mm-hmm. Was very nervous about being a freshman, and you know, how everyone would perceive me and things that they were getting freshmen to do, etc. And then anyway, a couple weeks in, I slipped on the ice, I re-injured my knee, I had to get a follow-up surgery to kind of clean it up a bit. But then what was funny is I had all the, like a bunch of the older people in the house, like the seniors, the ones that were you know, making freshmen do various things, that were getting freshmen to do stuff for me, and like carrying me to mess hall and things like that. So it was a funny experience where I got a few weeks where I got to live the high life and then got busted back down again. But
very nice.
Yeah, my falling stories come from either me hurting my knees or getting a concussion or falling down the stairs. I've done that a couple of times. I've got very slippery steps in my house, and I've got a low overhang coming down the steps. So I always have to lean back like I'm doing limbo. And then if, you know, depending on what I've got in my hands and stuff, the steps are pretty slippery, and I've definitely wiped out a few times there.
Yeah, I've got a few of all the same variety you mentioned: getting hurt, falling, playing basketball. I got a bad concussion playing basketball once. Falling Down the Stairs a few as well. But I'm going to save those because I think this is going to be a little recurring mini segment when we have guests. And, you know, I'll save a few things for those. But the one specific one that I'm going to mention has been a kind of a legendary story in my family for some time. I don't remember this because I was about, I want to say, 6 or 7 months old. And I was being carried down the stairs at my very first childhood house by my grandfather. And he was walking down. And you know the sensation when you think you're at the bottom step, but you're not?
Right.
There's like one more. So he thought he was going to step on flat ground. He didn't. He pitched forward and he threw me, legend has it, across the entire room. And apparently my dad, who was very young when I was born, he's only about 23 when this is happening, was sitting on the couch like and looked over and he didn't notice that it had happened. And he just saw me fly through the air right past him. And I had my arms out and I just landed flat on my stomach and just kind of skidded to a halt. And everyone did the, and then they looked at me and I just started to laugh. And I was totally fine, which was great because you're not generally supposed to throw babies.
No, that's what I've been told. Yeah.
Yeah. I know you probably would have been told that just recently. When
yeah. Like it's amazing how much people want to offer up that advice. Just don't throw them. Don't throw them.
Just don't throw them. They'll be fine. Don't drop it.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's my memorable falling down story for today.
Funny.
And I think that'll transition us nicely into Raptors future. So, games that we record next, we've got Miami, as you mentioned, on the road this Thursday, which is a tough test. Dallas on the road on Saturday, and then Orlando at home next Monday, and we're going to record post-game again. So that'll be a nice little tradition we're starting there. So three games. As I've written in my notes here, Russell, what are your predictions, your hopes, and your dreams?
Okay. Right now, riding high off the win over the Bulls, I think a game in Miami against the Red Hot Heat feels like a letdown game.
Sure.
I feel like maybe it'll be close, like competitive, but I think you got two games left against Miami. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a split. I mean, I know they just lost against Miami, and maybe they're looking to come back and, you know, keep riding this three-game win streak and everything like that. But it feels like that might be the loss. Like we keep looking at these one-week chunks, obviously, between podcasts, and I look at the game against the Mavericks and the Magic, and those are two teams out of the playoffs that I'm not overly concerned about that are sub-500 teams. They're playing for, let's be honest, they're playing for ping-pong balls. Like Dallas is still in the playoff hunt, but I think they're going to have... I don't think it's very likely that they're going to make it, and there has to be a point where they kind of like turn the other way. Because right now they're three games out of eighth, and with only a handful of games to go, like that's going to be tough to overcome. With the way Portland is playing, the way Denver plays off and on.
Definitely, they're 30-40. They're not a good team.
Yeah, exactly. So, at the end of the day, I think a loss against the Heat on the road makes sense, and then wins against Dallas and Orlando. So I say, you can't lose to Orlando. Like not at this point. Like Orlando wants to lose. There's absolutely no reason for them to win basketball games. And I mean, the same could be said about the Mavericks. Maybe they're still like saying like, oh, we're only three games out. But I mean, you should win that Orlando game at the very least. I'd like to see the win over Miami just in case, like, you know, we're looking at a playoff preview of some kind. But I'd be okay with 2-1.
Yeah, and I think as we were mentioning, there's probably no way Serge Ibaka is playing in that Miami game either. So
yeah, and that's going to be exactly the rotation is going. There's going to be adjustments to the rotation, trying to find lineups that work. You know, going against a really hot team while you're going through that and you're without. Arguably, like one of your best players since the break, and Serge Ibaka, definitely your best shooter since the break. So we've been talking about the shooting struggles in most games, and you know you're removing basically the best shooter since the break. So
it's tough.
Yeah, it's going to be a rough game, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's likely to be a rough game. I mean, obviously, Ibaka had another pair of threes tonight, and yeah, he's really providing a lot of the floor spacing. As you mentioned, you know, it could be interesting. They could throw caution to the wind, maybe throw out some crazy small lineups, try to get Whiteside out of the game, and just see what you can do. But that's going to be a tough one for sure. And then I think, yeah, like you said, you got to get those games Saturday and Monday. At the very worst, I mean, maybe you lose on the road to Dallas. You don't want that to happen, but I think a lot of this is going to be predicated on what happens to Ibaka in terms of his health and the suspension as well. So we'll kind of have to wait and see. But I think 2-1 is where you absolutely have to be. I went bold last week and said they'd go 3-0, and then Russell Westbrook must have heard me and absolutely eviscerated the team and made that not even possible for.
Well, they still went 2-1, and then throwing a Bulls game that we didn't preview because we didn't expect to be recording after it. But the interesting other thing that I just looked at the schedule, there's only one more back to back.
Oh wow!
It's
nice for them.
Yeah, in the beginning of April, 4th and 5th, Tuesday, Wednesday, back to back against the Pacers and the Pistons. So who knows where they'll be in terms of playoff seating at that time? But the schedule looks really wide open right now. And like I said, against not teams that are not that great. So I think the third seed is really there for the taking. And they're only three games at a second. I know I just said three games is basically insurmountable for the Mavericks, but you never know. I mean, have the Celtics really been that great since the break?
No, their differential's good, but I mean they've run up the score on some bad teams, and they have a really soft record. But
yeah, they've been they're 8-6 since the break, and they have a net rating of 1.5. I mean, that's lower than the Charlotte Hornets and the Minnesota Timberwolves, and it's good. It's good, but it's not like crushing.
No, exactly. So no, they haven't been that good, and they obviously blew that game the other day. They came back and had a good win over the Wizards. And obviously, Isaiah Thomas missed two games. So if they decide that they need to rest him down the stretch, you never know. They could start giving some games back.
Well, that's the thing, too, is I mean, like the Celtics and the Wizards have both had their incredible hot streaks. But they haven't exactly been great since the break. Like I said, the Celtics are 8-6 with a net rating of 1.5. The Wizards are 8-7 with a net rating of -2.6. Like, that's not good.
Not good at all.
So we're thinking that, like, okay, the Celtics and the Wizards are now the next tier below the Cavs. But I mean, you know, the Raptors have been without Kyle Lowry. I've still gone 9-5 with the second highest net rating in the East. Have turned into a top 10 defensive team. And I don't see any reason why they can't, overtake at least the Wizards and maybe even still have a shot at that number two seed.
Totally. If everything breaks right for them, I think that's definitely possible. I think everyone, when you hear people get analysts, pundits, whoever get asked about the Raptors or those three teams, the Celtics, Wizards, and Raptors, they just punt on the Raptors because they have no, and that's fair because they have no idea, you know, when Lowry's coming back, they have no idea sort of what this team is. I'm going to talk more about that later, the identity of the team right now, which has changed so much.
Right.
But I think they're the biggest wild card going into the East because if they really get rolling and everyone's healthy and Lowry comes back and he looks like even 75-80% of himself, they're going to be a really, really tough out.
Absolutely.
Cool. So, Russell, I know you're a busy guy.
Yes, I am.
You are a busy guy. So, here at the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, we have some sponsors, and one of them really helps people that are busy, like us. We love to read. We've talked about this before, and it's really hard to find the time. Sometimes you just want to fall asleep, or you start to read, and you have to sit down to do it, and you fall asleep. Things get distract you. You have a young kid in the house. I'm sure there's a lot of noise going on day and night. I live in a house with four apartments where you can hear your neighbors, and it's tough to find time to read sometimes. So, Audible.com is one of our sponsors, and they provide a really great service where you can listen to books on tape. And for you, the listeners of We the Podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service, which has over 180,000 titles to choose from. You can put them on your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or any other MP3 player. And it's a really great service. I've checked it out. I downloaded that book, a book that I own, Loose Balls by Terry Pluto. And that's one I'd recommend for our listeners is The History of the ABA, just to kind of give it a shot. And it's really, really cool. I like how it works. You can listen to it just like you listen to your podcasts, put it right on your phone and listen to it on the way to work. Listen to it if you're in Toronto, you're on the subway, commuting, driving, whatever. And it works really, really well. So Russell, do you have a book? Have you been checking out Audible? I know you've been mentioning checking out that Jonathan Abrams book or a couple other things maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. I got some things queued up. One that I've really wanted to check out as well that really crossed my mind recently was with everything going on with Mike D'Antoni and the way that he's big coach of the year candidate with the with the Rockets. I was thinking back to the 7 Seconds or Less Suns. I mentioned the Jack McCollum book last week, the Dream Team. And I think the 7 Seconds or Less is a book that I actually never got around to reading. And I've always meant to, especially as a big Steve Nash fan.
It's fantastic. I highly, highly recommend that.
Yeah. Book. You've read that. Okay. Yeah. I might toss that in. I'm thinking about if I take a trip to Toronto anytime in the near future, maybe I can get out to see a Raptors game or something like that, maybe a playoff game even. For the long drive, I think that's a great time to listen to an audiobook.
Totally. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/almighty. That's audibletrial.com/almighty, A-L-M-I-G-H-T-Y. And you'll be able to get your free audiobook, your 30-day trial, and access to all those titles.
Great.
Great. So, Russell, it's time again for me to take the mic. I'm going solo like David Lee Roth in 1986 or 7, whenever that happened. I'm just going to go right into the Grant rant. Now, I feel like I may have misled fans the past 4 weeks. The Grant rant is not always negative. It can be positive. Sometimes it's just things I feel really passionate about. It's things that I like to see or don't like to see. And obviously the Grant rants in the last 4 weeks have been kind of admonishing people and the fans in particular. But holy hell, is the fan base and Twitter in particular giving me plenty of fodder for this negativity. Next week, I'm going to promise that I will be positive. But for this week, I have another target in sight. The Toronto Raptors have developed a new identity since the All-Star break. We've had healthy doses of Fred VanVleet, DeLon Wright, Jakob Poeltl, and of course, newcomers Serge Ibaka and PJ Tucker. Couple those doses with the lack of Kyle Lowry, not to mention continuing health issues for Damari Carroll, and you can't blame Raps fans for feeling a tad out of touch with their own team. However, I've noticed a small segment of Raptors Twitter that has the nerve to complain about the aesthetics of the current brand of basketball the Raptors are playing. I guess that world-beating offense was a mirage, they scoff. These games have been excruciating to watch, they whine. Sweet fancy Moses, shut the hell up. I don't often say things like that, but honestly, it's just mind-boggling to me. This is a team that's busting their asses to maintain home court advantage in the Eastern Conference playoffs without their best player. It's a team that's playing a brand of basketball that will translate extremely well to those playoffs. Playoffs in which we hope Kyle Lowry will be back, but we literally have no idea what Kyle Lowry is coming back or when he's coming back. This is a team that's forging its own identity, just like the team did in the first half. They were an offensive team that struggled on defense. This has become a defensive team with one really potent offensive weapon and hopefully another returning. Yes, people are allowed to have opinions and want to watch beautiful basketball. I get it. But it almost seems like these particular fans would rather watch a beautiful loss than an ugly win. And for me personally, watching good, solid defense is beautiful. A guy being denied in the post, a deflected pass, a perfect switch, it's great. It's particularly a hell of a nice change from some of the stuff we've seen over the past couple of years from this team, when we'd hear likely the same segment of the fan base complaining that the team couldn't get any stops. There are 12 games left in the season. I think maybe only 11, actually. I don't care if the Raptors play them all in parachute pants or with sequin vests and buttless chaps on. If you're a fan of the team, this is the time of the year you live for. You live and die with every play of every game. Aesthetics be damned. Save the beauty contest for another day. That is this week's Grant Rant.
I love that segment so much. Yeah. I agree. I've been on this all season as well. Like, it's okay to be a team that's not the Warriors or the Rockets. It's okay to play a brand of basketball that's not, whip it around and hit a ton of three-pointers. It's okay to have some ugly basketball, some drawn-out possessions. I agree. Completely agree.
Great. I mean, I don't know. I don't get it. And I get that this is the knock on social media, that it's just an outlet for people and every single person can have something to complain about. There's so many people that you see all the time. You can't please all the people all the time. But the team is playing really well. And they've addressed basically all the concerns they had from early in the year. Are they perfect? No. But unless you have a LeBron James, you're not going to be a perfect team. Even his team's not playing that well. So, like, seriously, suck it up. Enjoy the team you have. And, you know, be thankful that... I mean, we say be thankful a lot. I don't really mean be thankful. I just mean appreciate what's going on. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. Be positive. Be happy. And you don't need to, you know, find something to gripe about just because maybe, yeah, the team's not hitting, you know, 33s a game like the Rockets or, as you said, moving the ball like the Warriors or the Spurs. But I don't know. I love the brand of basketball they're playing. It's such a nice for me, it's refreshing. And if they can add that offensive element when Lowry comes back, I think it's just a recipe for success.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, they have the same post-All-Star game record as the Warriors. They have better net rating than the Celtics, Wizards, Cavs. The Cavs have a negative net rating and are 7-7 since the break. Like, you know, no other team in the conference is killing it right now. So if the Raptors are doing what they're doing without Lowry, I'm cool with that.
Absolutely.
This could have very well been like a period where they just like completely went downhill, and they haven't really done that. They've had some bad losses and they've been down in games that they had to work really hard to come back in. But at the end of the day, like, these are good reps for the playoffs.
Totally. And like, what were you expecting when the Kyle Lowry went out? Like, the team was going to go 13-14-0. Like, there's going to be some ugly games when you don't have your best player.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's time to move into Dinos and Digits. Russ, what do you have for us this week?
All right. You mentioned earlier in the podcast, you talked about the Raptors' defensive rating post-All-Star break and the fact that, and we talked about it too with the updated numbers, and the fact that they are now fifth in the NBA post-All-Star break in defensive rating at 102.5. And that's compared to pre-All-Star break, they were 106, which made them 16th. So that's an 11-spot jump in the rankings in defensive rating. And that's something worth talking about, because one of the biggest knocks on the Raptors coming into this season, or throughout the season, I should say, has been their defensive presence, their defense. Their defense sucks. Their defense is slipping. Oh, this reminds me of 2014-15, when the defense was bad and they fizzled out because of it. Well, right now, your Toronto Raptors have a top 10 defense in the league on the season as a whole. They're exactly 10th right now, all told. And, you know, it's just interesting to look at some of the numbers. Like, we talked about the rebounding numbers and how different they've been. So that's a big factor. But as well, like, you know, you look at some things like field goal percentage allowed, pre-All-Star game. They were 15th. Post All-Star game, they're third. A three-point percentage allowed. Pre All-Star game, they were 17th. Post All-Star game, they are 10th. You know, right on down the line, like, everything you look at for defensive numbers, they're doing much better and ranking much better now after the break than before it. You know, to my point with both those percentages, the effective field goal percentage, the Raptors were 19th in effective field goal percentage allowed pre-break, and that's like that's really low. Like, they were allowing
terrible. Yeah,
it's really bad. And since the break, they're all the way up to sixth. So
yeah, huge jumps,
huge massive jumps. And, you know, forcing their opponents to commit turnovers and, you know, defending shots well and keeping the score. Even, and this is all with, like, terrible losses. The terrible loss to the Thunder mixed in, you know, the Bulls game that just finished mixed into those numbers as well. Like, you know, games in which they've given up a lot of points, but then at the same time, they've had a lot of games where their opponents has scored under 100 or barely at 100. And when you compare that to like pre-All-Star break, you see a lot of games like 114 points allowed, 115, 109, 112. And now after the like post-All-Star break, it's a lot of 97, 91, 101, 87, 78, 75, 91. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, you know, the team has really turned a lot around. And then, you know, you think Lowry's coming back. He shouldn't have that a very negative impact on the defense when he plays, but the offense is going to take back off. So you look at, you know, on the season as a whole, the Raptors still, even after, you know, having this post All-Star game stuff, the offense falling off, quote unquote, like, you know, you mentioned in your Grant rant that some people are talking about, well, you know, it was a mirage, the whole offense thing. Well, you know what? They're still fourth in the league in offensive rating. So, you know, forget the most recent sample. Like, you can't, people will say you can't overreact to how hot they were to start the season. Well, you can't overreact to how not blazing hot they've been since then. Like, yeah, they had a bit of trouble before the All-Star break, but they've been pretty darn good since it. And, you know, overall, even, you know, with everything that's happened and with, like, you know, hot streaks by the Celtics and hot and the Wizards and everything like that, the Raptors still have the best net rating in the Eastern Conference, period. Higher than the Cavs, higher than the Celtics, higher than the Wizards, even higher than the Heat, who have been coming on really strong over their, like, you know, half of the season, roughly. At the end of the day, the Raptors are a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense. They're fourth in offense, 10th in defense, and, you know, very few teams can boast that same thing. Mm-hmm. So, I think the whole point of this Dinos and Digits today is just to kind of say, like, wow, look at what they're doing on defense. Isn't this impressive?
Totally. And you know what? People complaining about the offense, like, they scored 116 against the Pacers. DeRozan didn't even play the fourth quarter. They scored 122 points. It was overtime, but they scored 122 points tonight. It may not happen in the way that you want it to happen, but as you said, they're still scoring. And the fact that you're adding these massive, massive improvements on defense with, you know, and obviously they're not flukes because there's tangible things that have happened to improve the defense that you can point to. Is just humongous. And it looks like it's going to be sustainable. The sample size is getting bigger and bigger, and actually the improvements are getting better and better. They're not, you know, regressing to any kind of a mean. So it's really, really, excuse me, pardon me. It's really awesome to see going into the playoffs. It's what you wanted from this team this year. You wanted to see them figure out what the problems were, address them, and take their best swing when they get to when the games really matter.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, as I mentioned, being top 10 in both offense and defense, like, you know, that you're a versatile team. Like, the games that you can't get your wins based on your offense and, like, you know, your offense that has been really efficient all season, well, now your defense can win you some games. You can grind some out as they've been doing. And, you know, at the end of the day, you can take a lot away from the Toronto Raptors and you can say that, oh, you're not a championship team or you're never going to get past the Cavaliers. Listen, there are three teams in the league that are top 10 in offense and defense. And that, you know, usually that is a sign of success, and teams that win championships are often fall in that category. And there are three teams in the NBA right now that fall into that category. And that's the Golden State Warriors, the San Antonio Spurs, and your Toronto Raptors.
Beautiful. This day in Raptors history, Russell, Serge Ibaka punched a guy, and the Raptors had a furious comeback against the Chicago Bulls. That's it. Okay, so, Russell, where can the people find us?
Sorry. That's perfect. That's exactly it. What better thing happened at this day in Raptors history than that? That's the one that we'll be talking about this segment next year, the year after, for years to come.
Absolutely.
So the people can find us, of course, just look for We the Raps Pod anywhere where you look for things, specifically what we have so far, at We the Raps Pod on Twitter, facebook.com/We the Raps Pod. You can email us at wetherapspod@gmail.com. Eventually we'll start getting in some listener feedback and questions and stuff like that. So you can start, you know, stuff in our inbox there. And we'll eventually branch out a little bit. This is a podcast on the rise. Happy fifth anniversary, by the way.
Very nice. Yeah. I can't believe it's been five. So long. Seems like just yesterday.
It seems like just yesterday or almost a month ago that we recorded our first podcast. Now here we are. But it's been really fun, and I think we're picking up steam. So let's keep it rolling.
Beautiful. And I think we talked about this going into the playoffs. We're going to do it a little more frequently as the playoffs are going on. So
absolutely. And hopefully for a long time, like hopefully a long, nice long playoff run.
Great. Well, I'm Dan Grant. You can find me at Slammin' Danny G on Twitter.
And I'm Russell Pedal. You can find me at Rusty Pedal Bike.
And you should now get out the salami and cheese, mama, because this podcast is over. Whoa, 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 whoa.